This is episode number 28 of the Merry Podcast titled The Macho Christmas.
You're listening to the Merry Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com.
I want to live again, and I want to look them straight in the eye, and I want to tell them what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless...
Yeah, there's a lot of bad isms floating around as well, but one of the worst is commercial. Makeup, even in Brooklyn it's the same.
That thing had nine lives, she just spent them all.
Woo! Dog, dare you!
I don't believe you're an angel. I think you're a demon right out of...
Henry, don't say that.
Does someone need a hug?
Tomorrow is Christmas. It's practically here.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Sentimental hogwash.
What was the last thing you and Charlie did before you went to bed Christmas Eve?
We shared a bowl of sugar, some shots of brown liquor, played my shotguns, field dressed a cat, look for women.
I'm the worst toy maker in the world. I'm a cotton-headed ninny muggins.
My mouth's bleeding, Bert! My mouth's bleeding! Doo-doo pedals! Doo-doo! There they are! Bert! What do you know about that? Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas and welcome to this, the 28th episode of the Merry Podcast at MyMerryChristmas.com, the world's largest Christmas community and the internet's longest ongoing celebration of Christmas, now in our 22nd year. My name is Jeff Westover, and I will be your host as we explore, this time around, the Macho Christmas. Now, you might think we've done this already on the Merry Podcast this season with our discussions of Bruce Willis and Die Hard, the connection between Christmas and baseball, and an entire episode dedicated to elves, but I tell you, we have only scratched the surface of Christmas and men. And seeing as this episode has been produced in the month of June, during a time of traditionally celebrating fathers, we think it's a great time to explore all things male as it relates to Christmas. It's also a good time to talk about other typically male behavior in the summer, namely blowing things up and having a party, which is what we do next month with Christmas in July. Now, if you haven't heard of all the planned festivities, please get to the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com and check it out, because the schedule is now changing and growing on an almost daily basis. While we are still squarely focused on the weekend of the 27th and 28th of July with the live radio broadcast with Jay at Merry Christmas Radio, we actually are seeing events line up all during the month of July as we reach out to the broad Christmas community online for their expertise. We'll be talking Christmas television with Joanna Wilson of ChristmasTVHistory.com. We will be holding a crazy Christmas movie marathon, and we'll have workshops on decorating, vintage decorating, Christmas lights, and of course, Christmas food. We also have producers of several new Christmas films and documentaries lined up with previews, prizes, and showcases of upcoming Christmas projects. You'll not want to miss any of these, and we hope to see you all there. The boy in every man has some pretty singular thoughts at Christmas. Guns, trains, and Santa Claus. Give us those three elements every Christmas, and we'll be happy. We're going to give you all three in this episode of the Merry Podcast. We will explore a little British humor in our exploration of Men and Christmas with the take of Monty Python on the Magi, and a real treat this time around, an interview with legendary professional wrestler, best-selling New York Times author, comedian, husband, father, and certified Christmas fanatic Mick Foley. By kicking us off, appropriately enough, with a montage of Christmas from the male perspective, is an all-guy group known as Voicemail.
Okay. 'Twas the night before Christmas, I'm here in my shop, tuning my turbo sled and having a pop. The presents were stacked, neck deep in the sled, placed there neatly by elves Ed and Fred. The reindeer were picketing outside the shed, mad because I purchased a hot rod red sled. With the whole world to cover all in one night, I just had to modernize my method of flight. I jumped in my rocket and buckled up tight, put on my helmet and goggles just right. I flipped on the burners, flung open the doors, put my foot to the metal and blasted off with a roar. The speed that I traveled surprised even me as I left my last present. It was 2:45. Soon I was home with thoughts in my head of fun that I'd had and the cost of the sled versus reindeer feed, wages, cleanup, new harnesses, red light bulbs, new barn, etc.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Vroom, jingle-ling-a-ling, vroom, jingle-ling-a-ling.
Now the ground is white, go it while you're young. Take the girls tonight and sing this sleighing song.
Just get a bobtail bay, 2:40 for his speed. Then hitch him to an open sleigh and crack, you'll take the lead. Come with us and hear those jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open open sleigh.
This Christmas, on screens large and small, movies great and terrible will play for your holiday season. Get the straight poop on your Christmas movies at ChristmasFlix.com.
You're listening to the Merry Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com.
Santa Claus!
Ho, 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 ho!
Flying through the snow, can you hear him? Ho, ho, ho! He's so full of cheer.
Bob Rivers, who we just can't stay away from here on the Merry Podcast, carries us into this recent interview with professional wrestling legend Mick Foley, who, like many of us, has another life, that of the Christmas fanatic. This isn't a new passion for Foley, but it is taking him in some new and unexpected directions. Listen as we talk to him about his association with the new project called I Am Santa Claus.
On the line with me now is best-selling author, comedian, philosopher, Hall of Fame professional wrestler, and certified Christmas fanatic, Mick Foley. Mick, thanks for joining us here on the Merry Podcast. I got to ask you right out the gate, what in the world explains your love of Christmas?
Oh, well, like most children, I loved Christmas. But I believe it when I became a wrestler and when I had children of my own and found myself on the road for the better portion of the year, that the way I would retreat from the real, you know, the rough living that professional wrestling is. I mean, for people listening going, oh, he's not going to try to tell us it's all real. No, I'm not, but it's a very rough form of play. And, you walk around kind of worse for the wear most of the time and you're away from your children. So I found that, you know, maybe emotionally, you know, not only emotionally retreating on my own back to a simpler time made me happy, but seeing my children, you know, loved Christmas and enjoying it with me was something I looked forward to for months. And so instead of just doing it the one day of the year, we set up a year-round Christmas room, and we've made trips to Santa's Village in New Hampshire, in Jefferson, New Hampshire, every single year since 1996, and Christmas has become like a little part of my life every single day.
Wonderful. That makes you one of us, which makes you just a little bit crazy. At least that's how the world sometimes uses us. Now, you've got going for you right now a special Christmas project that I'd like to talk about. I've seen a few clips that are out there, but tell us about this and how you got involved in it.
Yeah, it's called I Am Santa Claus, and the director's name is Tommy Avalone, who has directed, I think, three or four very good but very, you know, bare-bones budget movies. And he has always cast a professional wrestler in some type of role, even if it's a cameo. So when he started out on this idea of I Am Santa Claus, which just wondered, what do these men do the rest of the year? These men who are, you know, as big as they come for 6 weeks out of the year and often have a difficult time adjusting the rest of the year. He thought, what do these men do the rest of the year? And somebody said, you know, Mick Foley's a big Christmas fanatic, and I believe he's played Santa Claus a few times. And I think the key word there is played, because although I had dressed up on many occasions in a red suit, and a few times, you know, like for the troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, I had the big, you know, the big, ridiculous, unbelievable-looking beard. I don't think anyone had ever been under the impression that I was Santa Claus. And Tommy in this movie gave me a chance to really try to become Santa. And it turned out to be really one of the most rewarding experiences of my life.
What was it like for you to be out of character as Mick Foley and in character as Santa Claus before a believing child? What was that like?
You know what? It was absolutely wonderful. One of the things I tell people, and one of the few true wise things I've ever penned, is that I said, don't ever let anyone else dictate to you what being a success is. We get to define that for ourselves. And so I had the really good fortune to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame just a little over 2 months ago in Madison Square Garden, the most famous arena in the country. And because Mr. McMahon, our benevolent billionaire owner, I just couldn't sell him on the idea that I should be leaving the stage on a sleigh, ascending into the garden air on a sleigh with Santa. I just couldn't sell him on that. He allowed, you know, Santa came out and surprised me, and it was very nice, and they gave me like a custom-made black and red checkered flannel Santa coat, because that had been my traditional wear, the red and black checkered flannel shirt. And it was a great experience. And then the next night, as part of WrestleMania, I came out in front of 78,000 people and, you know, received the acknowledgments, and they played my music, and that was amazing. But I'm not sure, again, going back to defining for yourself what being a success is, I'm not sure either of those great moments was any better than having that look in the eyes of a child, that wonder and magic of childhood, when a child is on your, you know, on your knee and firmly believes he's looking at Santa Claus.
Yeah. Now, how many kids have you had a chance to actually go eyeball to eyeball with? That's an interesting parallel for me, thinking about, you know, your career and all the things that you've done and the many faces that you've had to put yourself in front of. It could be a little daunting in front of a believing child.
Oh, it was, and that's why the park, as much as they loved me there at Santa's Village in New Hampshire, they weren't just going to throw me to the wolves, and so they had me come in an hour before the park opened, and they had some of the park employees, children, and friends come in. So I got to see about 30 children. The night before I did my appearance as Santa, I'd done a book signing at Santa's Village. So I'd signed copies of my book, Most Miserable Christmas, which actually was had a very nice anti-bullying story to it, using our WWE wrestlers as kids. And until we went across the street to the motel, I still wasn't sure whether I was going to throw the beard on. These are, you know, that would have been the easy thing to do. But the moment I made the decision to really, you know, to give it a real try, it was like night and day for me. So I kind of needed that experience, you know, the bleaching, which is not pleasant. And I gave the hair a try. People can see that on our Kickstarter at IamSantaClausMovie.com. They can see that I gave the hair a try. But when you try to turn dark hair white in a single sitting, it does not usually work out well, and it did not in this case. But I saw about 30 children. But when I was done, the owner of the park, who had had the park and her family since its inception when she was 3 years old, so the park's now 60 years old, she looked at me and she said, "You missed your calling." And that meant so much to me, because I really took being Santa Claus, not playing him, but I took being him very seriously. And then as I was getting ready to leave the hotel the next day, I looked in the rearview mirror and I just thought, wow, I'd be ashamed to not experience this again. So I called WWE and sent them a photo, and the next thing I knew, I was Santa on tribute to the troops. And so I went from being in front of 30 to being in front of a few million on national television. And then I was just calling, like, the local children's hospital, "Do you need a Santa?" I was calling friends of mine who had children of that age, saying, "Hey, you guys want a house visit?" And I called up a friend of mine who was doing the Hurricane Sandy benefit. So I was like a guy, it was every bit as fascinating to me as being in the ring and controlling a crowd in a different way was. I think I've stressed pretty much how much I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine not doing it again this year and for many years to come.
What does this mean for your future as Santa Claus, and how has it changed kind of your Christmas experience overall?
You know what? I think I was going to say greatly enhanced it, but actually I was a little bit trepidatious, which is the fancy author's word of saying a little scared about our own Christmas, because our children were at an age where they were, see, when I say that age, and I'm talking to your audience, we know what age we're talking about, you know, that they had one more, maybe had one more Christmas left in them. And the year before had been a little bit unfortunate in that the kids just would not go to sleep. Every year they stay up to catch Santa, every year they fall asleep, and we never had a backup plan. So this is December of 2011. And I finally said to my wife, I said, "I have to do something." So I'm going to drop a name here of a singer, but I used a jingle bell that singer Grace Potter had given to her bass player for her dog. Now, the bass player decided that she didn't want her dog jingle belling, you know, making jingling sounds all during the day. So she gave the bell to me, because she knew I was a big Christmas enthusiast. I went outside, I rang that jingle bell, and then my kids ran outside. My older son put out the presents, and when the younger kids came in, I thought, voila, here's Christmas magic. And instead, my son Mickey broke down crying, and he'd stayed up, and he wanted to see Santa. And so there was actually a heaviness over the Christmas of 2011, and I was trying to figure a way to make things work and just do something special. And so I know, you know, the people who are listening to your show and who follow your website are by nature Christmas fanatics, but if they've never done the live Santa experience, I highly recommend it. I ended up, I went through Santa Tim at first, through Real, I think it's called realsantas.com, and he just couldn't find a guy who would be available Christmas Eve on such short notice. And then Tommy Avalone, the director, said to me on that night where I did the book signing at Santa's Village, he goes, you know, one of the Santas I work with, he's a little crazy. Like, he really changed his name legally to Santa Claus. But he's an amazing Santa, and he might be able to do it. And not 5 minutes later, I got an email from Santa Tim and Hollywood Santa, the same guy, saying, I've found your Santa. And it just turned out to be the most magical experience. And I believe that's going to be up on the Kickstarter in a couple of days, like within the week, that moment when Santa came to our house and my son, who had been a skeptic, you know, just became a real believer, not just in Santa, but in the beauty of Christmas. And so it was the best Christmas. I even have gone so far as to say I now categorize our Christmases into two groups. There's every other Christmas, and there's the Christmas of 2012. It was a thing of beauty.
Right. One of the things that's interesting to me in the clips that I've seen of this project that you're working on is that the Santas that you're talking to are really a very, very diverse bunch of guys. And unlike other Santa documentaries that we've seen, this is focusing on them not as Santa Claus, but, for lack of a better term, after Santa.
Yeah.
Is that kind of the take on the whole film?
I was just lucky to be involved in a really good documentary called Beyond the Mat. And, it's because it's about what do these guys do outside the ring? How do they deal with, you know, the travel and the pain and the stress of being away from their families? And they found that, you know, life outside the ring was as fascinating, if not more, than what went on in the ring. And that carried over to the books that I did, a few of which were very successful because I was very honest with people. And they came away not saying, oh, well, that's what wrestling is, but coming away with more respect than they had when they entered it. And I think even though, there's plenty of Christmas, don't worry about that. I mean, there's plenty of Christmas, and Tommy follows these guys around through Christmases after, you know, that the moment after Christmas, that inevitable letdown where these guys realize that, you know, hey, yeah, starting tomorrow, I've got to go back to being that other guy that I don't enjoy being as much. But he found, I think, in every Santa he followed, and there's six very different people that, like all human beings, these are flawed men, but they find the very best of themselves when they're in that suit. It really, it's a responsibility people, they take seriously. I think people will come away with this with, a greater respect for the guys who wear the red suit.
Yeah, I ran into a guy the other day and he saw the post that we would be, talking a little bit, and he's like, are you talking the Mick Foley? I said, no. He said, I had no idea that he was so into Christmas. He says, I'm going to have to follow your site more often. I said, there you go. That's what it's about right there, is bringing the world together. That's the power of Christmas. Mick, thanks for your time. When can we look forward to seeing this finished project, do you think?
We're going to finish it up and hopefully submit it to film festivals in early 2014, and then hopefully it'll find its way to TV screens or DVDs by holiday season. But if anyone wants to make it happen, go to IamSantaClausMovie.com and then check the extras. We're going to be adding things every day. We're going to have the visit that Santa paid to our house, and we're even going to have Santa Claus heckling me at one of my my recent shows.
The website for the project is IamSantaClausMovie.com.
the links to which are also to be found on the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com. Just reference the posting for episode number 28 of the Merry Podcast.
You're listening to the Merry Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com.
Every year, the same arguments interrupt the holiday season. Can you say Merry Christmas? Is it a Christmas tree or a holiday tree? Can my kids celebrate Christmas at school? If you think the politicians are bad, think about the media. Always urgently breaking news to get us to believe that Christmas is somehow going away. Do you really see evidence of that? Stop buying into the media madness known as the war on Christmas. Come to DefendChristmas.com, where we've been fighting the war on the war on Christmas for over a decade. Christmas, it's about peace at DefendChristmas.com.
Look, kids, it's snowing.
Hey, Santa! I wasn't naughty all year long. I was mostly really nice.
Didn't kick the dog much or give my brother lice.
So don't bring me no red rubber ball. Don't want no Game Boy at all. I want a gun for Christmas.
Listen to me, Santa. I ain't playing round.
Got Mrs. Claus right by my side. She is gagged and bound.
If you wanna see her again, better leave me a brand new Mac 10. I want a gun for Christmas.
According to the FBI, over 1.5 million background checks on customers were requested by gun dealers to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System in December 2012. Nearly 500,000 of those were in the 6 days before Christmas. It was the highest number ever in a single month, surpassing the previous record set in November. On December 23rd alone, there were 102,222 background checks performed, making it the second busiest single day for buying guns in history. In fact, in 2012, Americans bought almost 17 million guns, second only to the Apple iPad as the most popular gift of Christmas 2012. Now, I have not grown up with guns as a personal part of our family culture. I was a city boy raised in Northern California, and while guns were talked about amongst extended family members, they were never in our home. But I live now in a part of the world where the gun culture is steeped in family tradition. Out here in the country, kids learn to fire a weapon long before they drive a tractor, and that happens long before they are ever allowed behind the wheel of a car. I didn't understand it at first, but I do now. Where we live is teeming with critters, and some wildlife require things bigger than mouse traps and bug spray to keep them away from the house. That's not to say there's a lot of gratuitous use of firearms where we live, and it's just a practical way of living, and it makes a lot of sense. What I've learned about the gun culture is that it is as much a father-to-son tradition as is baseball, water sports, cars, and hunting. It is just what men do in our culture. Back in episode number 26, we discussed non-Christmas movies with Christmas scenes or movies that made you feel like Christmas. What does this have to do with guns? Well, we received a lot of feedback on that feature, and a great deal of that feedback came from men. It was a topic that drew a lot of attention, and from all the mail we received, we noticed a trend about movies men associate with Christmas year-round. A lot of them have guns. Now, guns are not always a central part of the stories in these movies, and not all of these movies should be considered by the general public necessarily as Christmas movies. But enough men have written in with these suggestions that we feel we have enough data to rank the top five Christmas movies with guns. Here's number five.
Santa Claus, come quick! Look!
Incoming! Take cover!
Hurry up! Dave Majors, the $6 million band.
Santa, is there a back way out of this place?
Of course there is, Lee, but this is one Santa that's going out the front door.
Look, it don't matter a hill of beans what happens to me. The world couldn't afford it if anything happened to you. Now, you stay put.
Oh, that's very nice of you, Lee. And Lee, you've been a real good boy this year.
Yes, you sure have.
7 o'clock, Psycho C, Santa's Workshop.
Eat this.
And only Lee Majors can stop them. The night the reindeer die.
If ever there was a version of A Christmas Carol that needs to be skipped or not compared to more worthy versions that were true to Dickens, it is this far-out Christmas satire that is only loosely based on Dickens' tale. Bill Murray stars as a modern-day Scrooge who makes his money as a television executive. In fact, the clip you just heard actually came from the first moments of the movie, and it is actually a fadeaway of a television Christmas special that Murray has produced. His twisted vision of Christmas only gets worse before finally turning around over the course of several hilarious scenes featuring many now famous names. Of all the Christmas comedies we have reviewed, this one has the widest breaches in gender approval. Basically, men love this movie and most women hate it. Lee Majors Saving Santa seems to be universally beloved, though, but after that opening scene, the movie really only becomes more bizarre in many ways. It wasn't long after Scrooged was made that a real original Christmas movie hit the big screen and made more money than any other Christmas movie produced up to that time. And it, too, featured gun violence. Well, sorta.
Who is it?
It's me, Snakes. I got the stuff.
Leave it on the doorstep and get the hell out of here.
All right, Johnny. But what about my money?
What money?
AC said you had some dough for me.
That a fact. How much do I owe you?
AC said 10%.
Too bad AC ain't in charge no more.
What do you mean?
He's upstairs taking a bath. He'll call you when he gets out. Hey, I tell you what I'm gonna give you, Snakes. I'm gonna give you to the count of 10 to get your ugly, yellow, no good keister off my property before I pump your guts full of lead.
Home Alone was a story just about any guy could relate to. Nearly all young men can recall a time they first became the man of the house, if only on a temporary basis. It's a feeling of both power and sheer terror, and these emotions are showcased well by young Kevin McAllister, played artfully by Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone. In the scene we just heard, the clever Kevin has just fooled the pizza delivery driver by playing dialogue from, of all things, a movie. The clip that Kevin is using comes from a fictional movie given the title Angels with Filthy Souls, an obvious takeoff of an actual 1938 film titled Angels with Dirty Faces. Believe it or not, we get emails all the time asking about Angels with Filthy Souls and where it can be found. Even more amusing are the serious reviews we see online of Angels with Filthy Souls, and the bloggers who hypothesize what it means that a family like the McAllisters would have such a movie, and the fact that a completely home alone Kevin yells out to no one in particular, "I'm eating junk and watching rubbish." Most guys we talk to say to forget the analysis. Home Alone is good, clean fun, even if bad guys literally take it on the chin by the likes of low torches, falling irons, and fake gunfire. It isn't real, you see, and that's the premise of our next film that is set at Christmas time, that isn't actually about Christmas itself.
Just what do you think you're doing?
Randolph! Mortimer! Come in here, quickly! I finally caught him!
Who are you?
I've caught him red-handed.
Winthorpe, is that you?
I'm making a citizen's arrest. This man is a drug dealer. Look, look here in his office drawer. He's got all the bad drugs here. Marijuana joints, pills, Quaalude, Valium, yellow ones, red ones, cocaine grinder, drug needles. He's the pusher, not me.
Really? I just came in and caught this man planting this stuff in my desk. It's obviously some primitive attempt to try to frame me.
Frame you? Boy, if that isn't the pot calling the kettle black.
This man's obviously a lunatic. I'm calling security.
Put that phone down.
Hello, security. Merry Christmas.
It is hard to believe that Eddie Murphy was not quite the big movie star he would later become when Trading Places was made. He stars opposite Dan Aykroyd, another Saturday Night Live alum, in a tale of two very different men made purposely to swap places in life by two old, scheming, bored, and ultimately stupid rich men with nothing better to do. Before long, Murphy and Aykroyd get wise to their scheme, as we hear in this clip.
It was a dream. I dreamt the whole thing. It was just a bad dream.
Good morning, sir. Merry Christmas.
Coleman, I've had the most absurd nightmare. I was poor and no one liked me. I lost my job, I lost my house. Penelope hated me. And it was all because of this terrible, awful Negro.
It was the dukes. It was the dukes.
You're a dead man, Valentine!
It was an experiment. They used us as guinea pigs, man.
Dukes used us as guinea pigs. See how our lives would turn out. They made a bet.
Afraid it's true, sir.
I believe him, Louis.
Dukes ruined my life over a bet. For how much?
$1.
Believe it or not, this movie is a comedy. It isn't about Christmas, and it doesn't have much of gun violence in it other than Dan Aykroyd waving around a pistol. But it is popular with the guys, and they associate it with Christmas as one of those pull-down-the-shades, let's-get-in-a-Christmas-mood kind of movies that are watched in the summer. This next movie was a summer blockbuster, and like Trading Places, it is set at Christmas. For the record, we have never received a single email from any woman suggesting to us that this was either a Christmas movie or a movie that even reminded them of Christmas. But when we started getting emails from guys saying that this was one of those movies that put them in the Christmas spirit, well, we had to look it up. We encourage you to Google it. You may be surprised at how many consider this dark episode of Batman, the last one produced by Tim Burton, associates itself with Christmas. It is called Batman Returns.
These are the names of the firstborn sons of Gotham City, just like I was. And like me, a terrible fate waits for them. Tonight, while their parents party, they'll be dreaming away in their safe cribs, their soft beds. And we will snatch them, carry them into the sewer, and toss them into a deep, dark, watery grave.
Penguin? I mean, killing sleeping children, isn't that a little,
Tim Burton puts a lot of Christmas in many of his films. While Christmas is never really overtly addressed in Batman Returns, you can't help but trip up on closely associated themes of Christmas, such as you just heard in that clip, when Penguin, in his Herod-like way, declared his plan to slaughter the firstborn of Gotham. From subtle digs like that to splashy displays of Christmas lights and trees, I'll be darned if I don't have to admit that this is a non-Christmas movie that does indeed have a Yuletide glow to it. But when it comes to Christmas and guns and guys, there is really only one movie that ties it all together perfectly.
Ah, there it is! The holy grail of Christmas gifts, the Red Ryder 200-shot range model air rifle.
Ralphie, what would you like for Christmas?
Horrified, I heard myself blurted out.
I want an official Red Ryder carbon action 200-shot range model air rifle.
Now about 30 years old, A Christmas Story is frequently listed as one of the top five Christmas movies of all time. Ralphie's Christmas quest for a Red Ryder BB gun and the obstacles he encounters speaks to young gunslingers even today. My dad, who was a child of the 1940s, shocked me when we saw this movie in theaters back in the day. He bust a gut like I've never seen him do before or since, and it is because it spoke so effectively to his own childhood. He remembers asking for a Red Ryder BB gun. That's the power of it as a Christmas movie. Darren McGavin, as the old man who saves the day at the end of the film by giving Ralphie his gun, literally sparkles as the little boy in him surfaces on that Christmas morning. How many of us can identify with those feelings as we have secretly played with the toys our kids get from Santa before they ever wake up? In the end, none of these movies is really about Christmas, or guns, or violence, or guys, for that matter. There are two other movies that don't make this list of top five, but warrant a brief mention. One is Die Hard 2, which many consider to be one of the best sequels ever made, and like the original Die Hard, we find hero John McClane outwitting the terrorists at Christmas time again in ever spectacular ways. We don't know why Die Hard 2 isn't on as many lists as the original Die Hard is as a Christmas movie, but we think it should be, and many of our emailers do too. Another they feel strongly about is the film Lethal Weapon, the buddy-buddy cop movie of Danny Glover and a crazed mullet-wearing Mel Gibson. I actually tried to find a clip to showcase Lethal Weapon as a Christmas movie, but frankly couldn't find one without a lot of profanity and, well, people dying thanks to gunfire. It is one of those movies, but like Die Hard, there is just something about Lethal Weapon to guys that rubs in a little Christmas. In discussing this episode dedicated to guys, I told my kids we were going to talk about trains and Christmas. We have long had a Christmas train in our home, a festive model that sometimes circles the tree that is decked in Christmas glory, showing Santa as the conductor and powered by elves in the caboose with lots of colored Christmas lights in between. We've had it so long my kids consider putting it up every year, just a part of our annual Christmas decorating. But as my 12-year-old asked me the other day, what do trains really have to do with Christmas? It's a fair question, because it's not like trains were around to help Mary get to Bethlehem, and Santa has always been magically powered by reindeers. So when and how did trains enter the Christmas picture? Trains were the central piece of mass transportation. This time in culture also saw the rise of the Industrial Revolution and, as well, the media-driven mass popularity of the secular Christmas. The real connection of trains to Christmas was born of the fact that going over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house for the holidays was best accomplished by trains, and it happened every Christmas. In fact, more people moved by train in November and December over the course of those 100 years than by any other method. If you wanted to be home for Christmas, you very simply had to take the train. But I think the real kicker for when it comes to trains for Christmas had to be the advent of the model train, perhaps the first really big hit must-have toy of Christmas. The first toy trains were push trains, models that were made to look a lot like a real train that were generally kid-powered. How did they become a preferred Christmas present? Well, they were kind of expensive, and since their appeal was almost exclusively to boys, many families justified giving a train at Christmas to two or more sons. It was too expensive to get for one kid for a birthday, but it wasn't unusual for Santa to bring a shared gift at Christmas. Sometimes the shared gift was split between father and son. The given reason for this is because the next logical jump between a pushed train and a powered train wasn't electricity, it was steam. That's right, popular model trains of the late 19th and early 20th centuries burned actual fuel and generated real steam, powering trains along the tracks. Imagine putting that under your tree in an era when artificial flame retardant trees were not available. Fathers everywhere felt compelled to, quote, supervise, unquote. But don't kid yourself, trains then as they are now were a popular and growing diversion for big kids. Adults everywhere adopted childlike hobbies and model trains, if only because it took them back to their youth, and perhaps even memories of traveling somewhere far away by train at Christmas.
Little toy trains, little toy tracks, little toy drums, coming from a sack, carried by a man dressed in white and red. Little boy, don't you think it's time you were in bed? Close your eyes, listen to the skies. All is calm, all is well, soon you'll hear Christmas Kringle and the jingle bells ringing. Little toy trains and little toy tracks, little toy drums coming from a sack, carried by a man dressed in white and red. Little boy, don't you think it's time you were in bed? So close your eyes and listen to the skies. All is calm, all is well, soon you'll hear Kris Kringle and the jingle bells ringing. Little toy trains and little toy tracks, little toy drums coming from a sack, carried by a man dressed in white and red. Little boy, don't you think it's time you were in bed? Little boy, don't you think it's time you were in bed?
In 1901, Lionel Electric trains made their debut, and they were a runaway success for New York families. The first electric trains were large by today's standards. Most of them were about the size of today's garden trains, although you couldn't use them outside, of course. They were tin-plated steel, and those would eventually rust under even the driest conditions. These standard-gauge trains ran on track with rails about 2 feet apart. Cars 7 inches high, 5 inches wide, and 16 inches long were common, so they were quite large, although some of the cheaper sets used smaller measurements. But not everyone had room for such a large train. Those trains were also very expensive. Some of the early sets cost as much as, say, a modern automobile, but as manufacturing techniques improved, The cost of a good set eventually came down to that of, say, maybe a refrigerator or other major appliance today. Still, between 1901 and 1950, a name brand electric train was a pretty major purchase that needed to be budgeted. And since it was, after all, a toy, what was more natural than giving the most expensive toy you were ever going to buy as a Christmas present? The Christmas present, in fact. Of course, once the mysterious huge box was opened, it was only logical to route the train around the now naked-looking Christmas tree. So between Christmas and the day the tree came down, the train would run almost constantly, with almost everyone in the family taking a turn at operating it. Next year, of course, the train would come out before the presents appeared, and run a week or two before Christmas, and any cars or accessories in the new pile of presents were added to the temporary railroad as well. Between 1910 and 1960, it became common in some middle-class homes to build elaborate temporary railroads between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Many of these started as an extension of the Christmas tree route, but some took over spare rooms, back porches, and entire basements. In Roman Catholic homes, those often started with the nativity set near or under the tree, then other buildings and accessories were added, usually with no attention to scale or time period. In the Baltimore, D.C. area, these seasonal railroads were called train gardens. They had buildings, figurines, many accessories, and maybe even multiple trains running at the same time. The train garden tradition became so strong that the Baltimore, D.C. area fire stations would leave their engines outside until after Christmas and set up a large community train garden in their parking bays. In other parts of the East, the seasonal household railroads and their associated communities were called putzes, from the German word for put, set up, or putter. Starting about 1928, putzes all over the country included a new Japanese import, pasteboard houses with cellophane windows, and they had a hole in the back for C6 Christmas lights. These came to be called putz houses, and soon no putz was complete without them. All of these Christmas railroads and villages were important precursors of the holiday villages that were made popular by Department 56 many years later, as well as the display railroads operating in many botanical gardens.
Oh, my darling, you've been so good to me. In all our Christmases past, you've given me so many presents, but some just don't seem to last. So this year I must tell you, I want a certain thing, a very special present that Santa never did bring. I want an electric train for Christmas. Wanna hear that engine going round and round. I want an electric train for Christmas. Wanna hear that long and mournful whistle sound. An engine and a tender will hit my mighty scent. Box cars, hopper cars, flat cars, tankers, it'll be the best train yet. But at the very end, if the knuckle couplers don't let loose, just to show it is a real train, will be a big bright red caboose. I want an electric train for Christmas. Wanna hear that engine going round and round. If I get an electric train for Christmas, I will be the happiest baby boomer in town. I'll show you the layout I have planned. It'll run 11 trains at once, be the best one in the land. But about that finished basement that I know you wanted to see, well, sorry, honey, just forget that idea, 'cause the basement belongs to me. I want an electric train. train for Christmas. Wanna hear that engine going round and round. I want an electric train for Christmas. Wanna hear that long and mournful whistle sound. Wanna hear that long and mournful whistle sound.
There is no obvious connection between trains and Christmas, or the love of trains by men almost exclusively for well over 150 years now. In fact, in researching this topic, it has been fun to read historians who struggle to explain the mystery. For most of us who have had a 2-year-old son, there is no mystery to it at all. Trains are like cars, baseball, and guns to most men. They just never get that little boy part of them out of their system. That's why trains have been a serious hobby for adults, and mostly men, for over a century now. Some of it can be tied to historical museums and local interest groups who just cannot allow the history of the era of train travel to die. Vintage trains have been restored through local enthusiast groups who seek corporate sponsors and travel the world in search of old parts. Model train enthusiasts, often comparable in scope and passion as those folks who grandly decorate their homes for Christmas each year, proliferate in such groups, clubs, and associations around the country every year, and their membership is overwhelmingly men. Christmas, of course, is not the only time of year that they pursue the hobby of model trains, of course, but it is the time when some of their best magic is made. Many work donating their time, resources, and their trains to public displays in city halls, fire stations, schools, and churches, and they almost never fail to draw a crowd. In fact, the association of trains with Christmas has spurred a growth industry of sorts. Across the country, many places have Christmas trains that you can ride, complete with conductors and Santa hats, or even the jolly old elf himself aboard to entertain the kids. Trains have become a common element not only in decorating for Christmas, but also in storytelling of Christmas. It was about 20 years ago that the Polar Express was written as a children's title and later famously made into a blockbuster movie and what some call a Christmas classic in its own right.
Please, tickets. Well, you're coming. Never takes a rest. You can ride for free. You bet.
Of Orient are bearing gifts we traverse afar, field and fountain, moor and mountain, following yonder star. Oh, star of wonder, star of night, star of royal beauty bright, westward leading, still proceeding, guide us to thy perfect light.
King on Bethlehem's plain, gold I bring to crown him again. King forever, ceasing never, over us all to reign.
Oh, star of wonder, star of night, star of royal beauty bright, westward leading, still proceeding, guide us to thy perfect light.
Frankincense you offer have I, incense owns a deity nigh, prayer and praising all men raising, worship him God most high.
Oh, star of wonder, star of night, star of royal beauty bright, westward leading, still proceeding, guide us to thy perfect light.
Myrrh is mine, a bitter perfume,
bliss of life, of gathering gloom, soaring, sighing, breathing, dying, sealed in a stone cold tomb. Oh, oh, oh.
Star of wonder, star of light, star of royal beauty bright, westward leading, still proceeding, guide us to thy perfect light, guide us to thy perfect light, guide us to thy perfect light.
Another all-male group in Straight No Chaser introduces a brief conversation about that group of Christmas men known as the Magi. As we seriously discussed in episode number 11 of the Merry Podcast, the Magi are remembered in scripture, verse, and song every Christmas, and yet so many know so little about who they really were and what their real part to play was in the Christmas story. On the surface, it is the story of men being men. Three guys, or so we think it was three guys, hit the road without a plan, not knowing where they were going, but pretty sure they'd recognize it when they get there. Their journey takes them far away to a place where they don't speak the language, can't recognize the food, and really don't get the people. But as luck would have it, they draw all kinds of attention to themselves because they are so different, and they end up eating dinner with a king who, it turns out, and that they sense, is a pretty bad guy. They tell the king what they're looking for, but they are smart enough to go home another way after they have found it. Of course, after a long journey, they find what they came for, and being guys, they come up with gifts that are pretty impractical for their recipient. But it is, after all, the thought that counts. Now, we don't mean to make fun of it, but we're inspired by this next clip, courtesy of our friends from Monty Python, who long ago made a movie about a man named Brian that people kept confusing with Jesus, including, it would seem, the three wise men.
Who are you?
We are three wise men.
What?
We are three wise men.
Well, what are you doing creeping around a cowshed at 2 o'clock in the morning? That doesn't sound very wise to me.
We are astrologers. We have come from the east.
Is this some kind of joke?
We wish to praise the infant. We must pay homage to him.
Homage? You're all drunk. It's disgusting. Out! Come on, out! No. Burst in here with tales about oriental fortune tellers. Come on, out!
No, no, we must see him.
Go and praise someone else's brat. Go on!
We were led by a star.
Led by a bottle of all light? Go on, out!
Well, we must see him. We have brought presents.
Out!
Gold, frankincense, myrrh.
Well, why didn't you say he's over there? Sorry the place is a bit of a mess. Well, what is myrrh anyway?
It is a valuable balm.
A balm? What are you giving him a balm for? It might bite him.
What?
That's a dangerous animal. Quick, throw it in the trough.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is. It's great.
No, 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 it is an ointment.
Oh, there is an animal called a balm. Or did I dream it? So you're astrologers, are you? Well, what is he then?
Hmm?
What star sign is he?
Capricorn.
Capricorn, eh? What are they like?
He is the son of God, our Messiah, king of the Jews.
That's Capricorn, is it?
No, that's just him.
Oh, I was going to say, otherwise there'd be a lot of them.
By what name are you calling him?
Brian.
We worship you, O Brian, who are Lord over us all. Praise unto you, Brian, and to the Lord our Father. Amen.
We do a lot of this, then?
What?
This praising.
No.
If you drop in by again, do pop in. And thanks a lot for the gold and frankincense. But don't worry too much about the myrrh next time, all right? Thank you! Goodbye!
Well, there was three wise men traveled from afar. Well, there was three wise men traveled from afar. And their names was Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar. You know, they studied the heavens and they gazed upon the stars. Yeah, they studied the heavens and they gazed upon the stars. And their names was Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar. It was late one night, they was walking out on the sand. It was late one night, they was walking out on the sand. and they saw a star shining bright on a distant land. Then they heard a voice like the angels when they sing. Yeah, they heard a voice like the angels when they sing. Singing hallelujah to the baby king. Well, they set out riding towards that shining star. Yeah. Well, they set out riding to that shining star. That rambling Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar. Well, they crossed the desert into Herod's land, they did go. Yes, they crossed the desert into Herod's land, they did go. David said, when you find that baby, won't you let me know? Well, they found him lying in a manger in the hay. Yeah, they found him lying in a manger in the hay. But they didn't tell Herod, you know, they traveled home a different way. Ain't that right, Richard? Was Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar.
That's Garrison Keillor with Pat Donahue with Wise Men Blues wrapping up that segment. We remind you now of a ton of stuff happening with Christmas this summer with the Christmas Community Online, not the least of which is our Christmas in July party. There's so much planned for the month of July, we just don't have time to explain it all here. But if you want not only an early preview, but a thorough review of what's coming for Christmas 2013, you'll want to be at My Merry Christmas early and often this summer as we lay it all out there for Christmas in July festivities. We'll have 10 hours of live radio broadcasting with folks calling in from all over the world, including interviews with great artists and Christmas celebrities. We'll have expert-hosted chats, contests, giveaways, previews, and all kinds of merriment designed to bring Christmas to a hot summer month. Inclusive of that is the opening of our annual exchanges at My Merry Christmas. The 8th annual ornament exchange is now open, where folks can sign up to swap a Christmas ornament with a merry friend from somewhere out there in the world, or you can sign up for our Christmas card exchange and flood your mailbox with Christmas cards from all over the world this holiday season, a great tradition that just gets better and better every year. In July, we have the e-card exchange, and there are rumors going about of even a creative Advent calendar exchange for this year. Get online and engaged at the Merry Forums for more details on all of this. We're also pleased to announce the launch of Kringle Radio. It was just too confusing for folks to understand Merry Christmas Radio in two formats, so we split them up. The stream at live365.com remains Merry Christmas Radio, and the all-year HD music channel becomes Kringle Radio, with both streams still available at mymerrychristmas.com. If you are an artist with music to share, or perhaps an expert with an idea for the Merry Podcast that you'd like to get out there, don't hesitate to email me, jeff@mymerrychristmas.com, to discuss the possible inclusion of your Christmas with our audience here on the Merry Podcast. Thank you for joining us on this Merry episode, and we invite you to take in every past episode archived online for us at christmaspodcasts.com. We thank all the artists and contributors who have made this episode of the Merry Podcast possible, including John Schmidt, who provides our theme music for this and every episode, and also voicemail, Mick Foley, Bob Rivers, Patty Loveless, Glenn Campbell, Warner Brother Pictures, Paramount Pictures, The Aquatones, Monty Python, Garrison Keillor, and Pat Donahue. For MyMerryChristmas.com, Merry Christmas Radio, Kringle Radio, and all the sites of the Merry Network, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.